You are listening to The Business Wilderness, the voice of entrepreneurs.
Welcome to The Business Wilderness. My name is Ahmed Al-Houli, and today I have a very special guest, Mr. Adam Musa, founder, CEO of Benchpro. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thanks very much. It's great to be here.
Absolute pleasure, buddy. Absolute pleasure. Adam, where did it all start for you, buddy? Before Benchpro, before you got to where you currently are, where did things begin?
That's a good question. So the long version of that story is essentially in agency. So prior to that, I actually have no formal qualification in digital marketing or anything that I do today. I actually finished uni many years ago as an industrial designer. So what I do today is completely different to what I started off in. But having said that, I guess the reason why I fell into what I did, and the reason why I'm in this space now, is because the first business that I ever tried to create when I was pretty much fresh out of uni failed spectacularly, and I think the reason why that it failed and ultimately my learning behind it was because I didn't know how to market a product well. I knew how to build a product, I knew how to create it, I knew how to work with suppliers, I knew how to get something done, but I didn't know actually how to sell a product. So I took a few steps back and I thought, okay, well, if this is the path that I want to go down in the future, then I really need to learn how to market. I really need to learn how products are sold and how audiences are created. So I took an internship at an agency, which led into a full-time job at an agency beyond that over a couple of years. And then I kind of took a simple step out from there. I moved into another industry as well. I went from marketing into product management, so learning how digital products were created. And then from there, I decided to work for myself for a little while, and I had a couple of clients that I was working with at the time, and it kind of started to grow from there. But ultimately, I always wanted to get back into product, which was always my thing, and always the place where I thought I could add the most amount of value. Services were great, but I'm a product guy heart and heart. So beyond that, it really kind of came to me by lucky accident. One day, a client that I hadn't worked with in years got in touch with me and said, "Hey, Adam, are you still doing some of that fan voting tech that you used to do when you used to work with the A-League a few years ago? Because we have a brief and a client, and they need it. Can you get it done?" And we said, "Yeah, sure, of course we can." And we did it, and we used that as one of our first kind of launch pads to prove the concept of what ended up becoming Benchpro. We used it, we tested a couple of hypotheses with the client, and then we decided to take it to the next brief that came to us. So we didn't really go out looking for it, and we didn't really go out looking for to create the product. It really sort of came to us one day with a little bit of different thinking, going from that services approach to creating a product and really kind of templatizing what we do. So the journey was very interesting, and it's kind of taken me across multiple disciplines.
Awesome. What is Benchpro?
So Benchpro is basically a campaign creation tool, and campaigns are generally digital marketing campaigns. So it could be at its simplest, a simple landing page to collect name, phone number, email addresses. We work very much in the sporting space at the moment. So the campaigns that we generally tend to offer and that our clients tend to use us for could be, I think you mentioned earlier, Ahmed, that you were a sportsman, right? So what yep. do you follow the Bulldogs?
They're our local club.
Oh, great, fantastic. Yeah. So as an example, it could be a campaign where the Bulldogs want their fans to vote for who they think the greatest all time Western Bulldogs squad were, or to be able to vote on highlights for the last game, or to be able to upload photos of their favorite of the Bulldogs that they own, or something along those lines. Those types of typical sort of creative campaigns that are run on digital mediums, either via their app or their website. But rather than outsourcing that project to an agency, which is typically how these kind of things go, they use Benchpro software to do that instead. So their team internally can build these kinds of campaigns, make them look completely on brand and 100% custom, without having to hire a developer or without having to outsource the project to an agency. So they can spit up that campaign in days as opposed to months.
Wow, convenient. Save a lot of time.
Yeah, exactly. Time, effort, and money are really the things that that are really the issues that we solve. Being able to create these campaigns to capture really good fan data, being able to sell more memberships, being able to sell more tickets, being able to provide more value to their sponsors, those are really the things that we do.
Awesome. So in terms of your clientele, you mentioned the Bulldogs and a few other teams, and these are all large league teams, I mean, in each sporting code. So you guys would see a lot of different features, trends, patterns over the years. And even the viewing of these sporting codes has transitioned. I mean, crazy. So what are some of the trends and patterns that you guys have noticed that over the years that are going to even change even further and take each sporting code to a whole new level? Or maybe just give us an example like the AFL.
It's really funny because the more things change, the more they stay the same at the same time. So that's one funny thing that you realize internally. So the thing with AFL is really memberships, right? The AFL, probably beyond any other league in Australia or probably even any other league in the world, I would say in some cases, what they're really interested in doing is getting people on board and to show the fact that they're a member. They don't really care how often that you come in to see a game, or well, they do care, but it's a secondary kind of purpose. But the first thing they want to do is make sure that you're a paid-up member. So as part of that, they want to acquire data. So they want to bring on board as many people into their marketing databases as they humanly can, right? Because they essentially do big surveys at the start of the year with Nielsen and other big data providers, and they know that, you know, in all of Australia, there are X amount of fans that identify as Western Bulldogs fans or Collingwood fans or whatever it is. But we only have a small percentage of that on our books, so we need to capture that data. So actually acquiring that data is really key, and clubs will do basically anything that they can to be able to acquire it. And we find that what we do by actually engaging the fan first through these, you know, these fun kind of engaging gamified campaigns and then asking for the data beyond that, what we call zero party data, works really, really well. And it's a really fun and engaging way to get a fan to pass on their data, which the club can then use to hopefully monetize in whichever way they feel necessary. The challenge that I find, though, is that everybody talks about data, and acquiring data is not unique to the sports industry. So what you do with that data is the funny bit, is that I don't think that anybody has really truly figured that out. Some clubs do it phenomenally well, and a lot of clubs kind of struggle, but that's definitely not just in sports. You could say that about any big business or anything like that as well, that some people know exactly what to do with the data. They can put it through a process or a system that they've got set up and basically acquire customers at the end of it. Others just want to acquire data for the sake of collecting data. So it's a challenge, but it's not one that I think is unique to sports. It's one that I've definitely seen across multiple industries as well. The fact that, you know, as you saw, Rob, you mentioned earlier as well, transitioning over to digital is a really big thing as well. That's one thing I noticed in the industry as well. You and I, as sports fans, we noticed, you know, obviously you've got more streaming services that are available than ever before. Content is available at your fingertips and that kind of thing as well, which is really key for us. It's the way we consume sports as millennials now, and even just, you know, as a broader kind of population, having that content on demand is really key. I'm a huge Formula One fan, and actually watching the transition go from a very traditional, very older demographic, you know, 46 is the average age of a Formula One fan or something like that now, and watching them actually move down to younger demographics, putting a lot of their content on YouTube free to watch, highlights, packages, getting access to, you know, fan to drivers and that kind of thing, having their own streaming service. So actually watching them is a perfect example of how even a nascent industry can go from being quite guarded and quite old to, you know, bringing in and to kind of following what people are looking for and how people consume media. So asking for more digital, and we see that more in what we do as well, and when we work with agencies and that kind of thing, they say that the brands that sponsor these big clubs are after more and more data as well, and are trying to do more digital. But whereas the traditionally they were trying to sell a little bit of digital, so they were trying to sell one tiny little campaign, but then trying to sell the jersey sponsorships, which they've been doing for decades and decades. Now it's really a case of integration. So you get this jersey sponsorship. Now how can we capture data off the back of that? How can we make it all one big piece? So the integration of digital, not just having it as something on the side that, as a box to tick, is something that's new and happening in the industry. I would say it's not something that's unique to sport, but I see it happening more and more often, especially in the conversations I've been having even very recently with a lot of big agencies and that kind of thing, integrating the digital piece now, not just having it as, oh yes, you know, we have a streaming service, or, you know, we have something online for fans to be able to check out. It's actually making it an end-to-end experience is really the way it's going.
Well, makes a lot of sense though.
Oh, it makes absolute sense, right? Yeah. I mean, it's the way of the future, right? This is an industry now that's waking up to it. And as big as sports fans as we are in Australia, I'd say we're still very far behind in a lot of things compared to the US, to the UK, and that kind of thing. We're very much playing catch up. When you go over to the US and you see some of the stuff that they do in stadiums, or, you know, the UK with streaming and that kind of thing, it's we've still got a long way to go. But we're definitely on our way there.
Absolutely. I mean, ESPN has literally been providing streaming services with different AR and animated GIFs and so on for people under the age of 15.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking NBA here, right? So that they stream the NBA in this format. I mean, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. Like even the LA Clippers, they've got some amazing new tech now where you can actually, so it almost adds like an NBA 2K, like a video game level on top of the actual live broadcast, where you can see where players are about to go to, all kinds of crazy, you know, they put animations around the crowd and things like that. It's incredible. But I think it's also because in America and the UK and things like that, they're a bigger population, so they've got a lot more money to spend than what we do. So our challenge is not just the fact that we're behind. There's a reason for that. It's because we're a limited market. There's only so many people in Australia that can be sports fans. So I think for what we do, you know, the AFL is regarded as one of the best leagues on the planet. And you can ask anybody in the world that, and they'll tell you that. So we do something phenomenally well, but another thing that we are catching up to. So it's a bright future, I would say.
Awesome, awesome. What's the future for Benchfolk? How do you guys keep innovating, disrupting, moving forward?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think where we're going to go in the future, and I don't think we've quite nailed the actual answer to this question either, is do we want to compete with agencies, or do we want to augment what agencies currently do? So, and there's an argument for us to be able to do both, and in some cases we do both, where we actually, you know, replace an agency, or in some cases we make the agency better in some cases. So there's that. But then, speaking as a sports fan as well, not just from an industry perspective, there's a lot more that we've got in our pipeline of different types of campaigns, different types of experiences that we're going to be offering the fan of the club, you know, ultimately our end user. Different types of fun experiences. We haven't even started to touch experiences in live streaming and that kind of thing, being able to real-time show the data that's coming through. So as an example, if you're watching an NBL game or a football game or something along those lines, being able to vote for, you know, where you think the next, who you think the next sub should be, or if you think that, you know, a particular player is playing at his best or something along those lines, being able to add that second screen experience and be able to add that second level of engagement, but then also show that data in real time on the broadcast. Little things like that we're thinking about that haven't been done yet, but we're very much on the verge of actually starting to implement and starting to work with other partners that work in broadcasts or even in stadium as well. The in-stadium experience is really interesting for us as well. We've actually just done our first case study at Optus Stadium, where our software was used in stadium by, you know, attendees of a particular AFL club. So actually working in stadium and be able to bring out our software from just what you see on a laptop or a mobile, but into something that you'd experience when you actually go into a game. But then still offer the great stuff that we do, which is the data acquisition, the data crunching, all that kind of stuff. You know, it's going to be a really fun couple of years, I think, for us. I think the business in the next 1 or 2 years will be very different to what it is today. But that's half the fun, I would say.
Wow, fascinating.
Yeah.
It's been quite. I'm sure it's been quite a journey for you guys. You've had some great success and so on. If you could go back in time, what would you do differently? If so, anything at all?
That's a really good question. I've been thinking about this one for a little bit of time. And the truth is, I don't really know if I would do anything that differently, because not to say that I've done everything perfectly, of course, but it's a really difficult question to answer, right? What would you do differently if you were to do it again? I think there are two main things that really stand out to me. And these are just from my own experience. I'm not necessarily saying that they're relevant for everybody, but if you are in the situation that we're in, then perhaps it could be relevant. The first one would be, if you are looking at raising capital and if you are looking at seeking investment, have those conversations very early. I think that was one thing that we learned. So we're in the process of raising a bit of capital at the moment as well. So we can start to look at international expansion and do some more exciting things with our platform as well. So it's a good position for us to be in to raise capital. We've gone a year and a half now without needing it, which has been really to our benefit. I guess the first thing that I'll say is that don't raise capital at the very start. Try and bootstrap if you can. I think that's probably the first piece of advice that I would give. But when you are looking at raising that capital, make sure you have those conversations 3 months before you know when you think you need them. So what I mean by that is that, you know, if you think that you need to raise capital in March, start having those conversations in January, because the amount of time that it can take sometimes to build those relationships, to find the right people, to go through it, it's a mug's game, for lack of a better word. So actually having those conversations earlier, the better it will be, because it is a full-time job in and unto itself. So the quicker you can start to build relationships with potential investors or people who can open doors and that kind of thing, truly the better it's going to be for you. I think the second thing that I would say as well is, if you're not a techie person, if you're not a coder or techie-minded and that kind of thing, this can be really difficult, but it'll ultimately pay huge dividends, I would say, is to pay attention to the tech side of things and to know, you know, kind of have a rough idea of what your platform is built on and what tech your developers and your technical team are using, because ultimately you don't want to put yourself in a situation where you've got a product that works but it sets you back, because it could be as simple as the language that was used to be able to build your application or something like that could be old, you know, where it could have been built on the latest and greatest, but they decided for some reason to build something that was easier or cheaper or whatever it was, but ultimately, you know, it's not going to last as long. If you're not a non-technical founder, it's important to do your research and to know what it is and to know what it should be built on, or to get a second opinion on that kind of thing, because ultimately you can put yourself into some technical debt, which can be a bit tricky and interesting to get out of. So it's very important to know when your platform is being built. It's very difficult to go back, but it's very easy to go forward. So make sure you set yourself on the right foundation moving forwards. I've seen this in my own times as a, you know, through agencies when we were building websites and apps for people. You know, we were lucky to kind of circumvent that issue as well through Benchmark, and we didn't really have that issue. But knowing and having that, a little bit of that experience and knowing exactly what's going to take you forwards, those decisions that happen today and those conversations today will save you potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars in a year or 2 years' time. So it's really important to know that up front.
Well, there you go. Awesome. Great insight. All right, then. We've had a great discussion. You've shared a fair bit with us. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Where can we find you guys online?
So best place is benchboat.com, so benchboat.com. And then for me personally, LinkedIn is always the best, I would say.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Mr. Adam Musa from benchboat.com. Ladies and gentlemen, check him out, refer him to your teams, local teams, whatever. Anything got to deal with sports, they can definitely help you guys in terms of engagement. Mr. Adam Musa, thank you very much for joining me on the Business Wilderness.
Thanks very much, man. I appreciate it.
You are listening to the Business Wilderness, the voice of entrepreneurs.